me tell you this, son. Can't beat the rank and file. Go get organised.
Yeah, kicking off this week's broadcast of Radio Resistance Chesterfield with the sound of the Redskins, Go Get Organised, and since it's the last broadcast before Christmas. Next up, we've got a track by The Pogues, which touches on the gulf between the obscene wealth and grinding poverty of New York. It's the track entitled Fairy Tale of New York.
It was Christmas Eve, babe. A drunk tank, an old man said to me, won't see another one. And then he sang a song, the rare old mountain tune. I turned my face away and dreamed about you. Got on a lucky one, came in 18 to 1. I've got a feeling this year's for me and you. So happy Christmas, I love you baby, I can see a better time when all our dreams come true.
They got cars big as bars, they got rivers of gold. Through the windows right through you, it's no place for the old. When you first took my hand on a cold Christmas Eve, you promised me Broadway was waiting for me.
You were pretty queen of New York City.
When the band finished playing, they held out for more. Sinatra was swinging, all the drunks they were singing. We kissed on the corner, then danced through the night. The boys of the NYPD choir were singing, go away babe. And the bells were ringing out for Christmas Day.
Radio Resistance Chesterfield.
The boys of the NYPD choir still singing, go away babe. And the bells are ringing out for Christmas Day.
I could have been someone.
Well, so could anyone. You took my dreams from me when I first found you.
I kept them with me, babe. I put them with my own. Can't make it all alone. I built my dreams around you.
The boys of the NYPD chorus to sing.
And the bells are ringing out for Christmas Day.
Yeah, Sound of the Pogues featuring Kirsty MacColl, Fairy Tale of New York. And sadly, it's not just the characters in this song who are going to be poor on Christmas Day this year. Indeed, the front page of this week's Socialist Worker describes the poverty caused by the Tories' bedroom tax, and also describes how council bosses across the country, including in Sheffield, have covered the town in posters and even sent tenants Christmas cards as part of a Put Your Rent First campaign. I mean, not only is this patronising and insulting to people who fall behind on their rent through no fault of their own, but wasn't the money squandered on this propaganda campaign, because that's all it is? Be better spent on helping those unable to afford the bedroom tax. And in Luton Council, they've sent out a list of things that are less important than catching up on rent. That includes food, electricity and gas. Great. So it's perfectly okay as far as Luton Council are concerned, if you starve to death or if you freeze to death, as long as you pay them your rent. And it's all well and good Ed Miliband, the leader of the Labour Party, saying they're going to repeal the bedroom tax if Labour get in next election. But if that's the case, then why are Labour councils, some of whom, for example in Sheffield, got in due to the anger with the government, in the case of Sheffield with the Lib Dems jumping in bed with the Tory government? The Labour councils in Sheffield, for example, got in due to the anger with the government. Why are the Labour councils aiding and abetting the government by enforcing the bedroom tax and chasing people for money they don't have? And the number of notices to seek possession, which is the first step towards eviction by councils, is up by a third since the bedroom tax was introduced. But thankfully there is resistance. For example, Manchester's anti-bedroom tax campaign is building up a series of protests outside court hearings in January in solidarity with the tenants facing eviction. To beat the bedroom tax, we not only have to take on the condemned government, but it seems we also have to take on the Labour councils who are effectively enforcing the tax. This means building grassroots anti-bedroom tax campaigns, protesting outside court cases, and even protesting outside the people's homes when the bailiffs arrive to try to evict them. And for more on this story, including how to organise against the bedroom tax, get your copy of this week's Socialist Worker, on sale tomorrow and most Saturdays outside Primark in Chesterfield between 11 a.m. and 12:30 p.m. Or you can read it online, www.socialistworker.co.uk. And on the subject of the bedroom tax, next up we've got the sound of Citizen Smart. You can have a spare room in a pokey council flat.
I'm a wealthy estate wing, I live on the bottom floor, but we are no allowed to even live there anymore. Oh, they say we have too many rooms in a social rented flat, with an 8x10 foot box room where you can't swing a cat. But you can't have a spare room in a pokey council flat. Oh, Ian Duncan Smith and Co. to put an end to that. Oh, they say move to a smaller house, they say that is their plan, when the odds against you finding one from 99 to 1. Oh, I'm gonna have to find a flat, I'm too young for my own room, have to share with my wee brother, say some government balloon. But as we both grow older, they will reassess our needs. I'm just wishing I was 16, he's just wishing I was dead. Oh, you can't have a spare room in a pokey council flat. Oh, Ian Duncan Smith and Co. to put an end to that. Oh, they say move to a smaller house, they say that is the plan, when the odds against you finding one of 99 to 1. Do my auntie's in a wheelchair, but these Tories dinna care. Oh, they say they have a deficit, she has to pay her share. Oh, 60 quid a month will take then Lear to her fate. We're skiing millionaires a tax cut, cos they say they're due a break. But you can't have a spare room in a pokey council flat. Oh, Ian, Duncan, Smith and Carl have put an end to that. Oh, they say move to a smaller house, they say that is a plan. And the odds against you find one, from 99 to 1. Now that Buckingham Palace looks a fairly roomy gaff, but the lodger there gets benefits at rates that make me laugh. A civil listing perks worth near £100 million, and a dozen other mansions lying empty all year round. But you can't have a spare room in a pokey council flat. Oh, Ian, Duncan, Smith and Carr have put an end to that. Oh, they say move to a smaller house, they say that is the plan. When the odds against you find him one, a 99 to 1. Those MPs down in London, they must think that we're all dense, with our second home apartments where the public pays the rent. They even get a food allowance, 200 quid a week, but they say that we're the scroungers, it's their arse up in their cheeks. Oh, you can't have a spare room in a pokey council flat. Oh, Ian, Duncan, Smith and Carr have put an end to that. Oh, they say move to a smaller house, they say that it's the plan. And the odds against you finding one, I'm 99 to 1. Oh, we've formed a federation and we're gonna have our say. Oh, that bedroom tax that has to go and we're not gonna pay. Oh, we're gonna march to George's Square to demand our civil rights, like May, Mayor, Tories and that liberal shite. Oh, you can't have a spare room in a pokey council flat. Oh, Ian, Duncan, Smith and Carr have put an end to that. Oh, they say move to a smaller house, they say that is a plan. When the odds against you find a man, a 99 to 1. Oh, you can't have a spare room in a pokey council flat. Oh, Ian, Duncan, Smith and Carr have put an end to that. Oh, they say move to a smaller house, they say that is a plan. When the odds against you find a man, I'm 99 to 1. Oh, when the odds against you find a man, I'm 99 to 1.
This is Radio Resistance News, brought to you courtesy of Socialist Worker Newspaper. The Tory bedroom tax and rocketing energy prices have made it impossible for thousands of poor council tenants to make ends meet. But councils are hounding them with threats of eviction. Ed Miliband's warm words against the bedroom tax are cold comfort to some of the poorest people in Britain, as long as Labour councils are hounding them for money they don't have. The hearing of evidence at the inquest into the death of Mark Duggan has come to an end. The coroner, Judge Keith Cutler, told jurors they could reach one of three conclusions. They could find that Mark was killed unlawfully, or killed lawfully, or they could reach an open or they could not reach an open conclusion. Firefighters in England and Wales have called strikes during two of the busiest periods of the Christmas holidays. Workers are set to walk out on Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve in rage over Tory attacks on firefighters' pensions. As activists are arrested in many parts of Egypt, Mahena El Masri, a lawyer and member of the Revolutionary Socialists of Egypt, speaking to Socialist Worker, discusses the current struggles against the protest law and a warrant issued for her arrest. Also in this week's Socialist Worker, a report on the Socialist Workers' Party's recent national conference, how the travellers of Dale Farm are suffering 2 years after their eviction from their own land, Kenya, the crimes of British colonialism, the Mau Mau rebels who fought back, and the Kenyan people's betrayal by Kenya's new rulers. A review of the soon-to-be-released film, Mandela, The Long Walk to Freedom. You can get your copy of Socialist Worker each Saturday in Chesterfield Town Centre between 11 a.m. and 12:30 p.m. from outside of Primark. Or you can read Socialist Worker online at www.socialistworker.co.uk. That's www.socialistworker.co.uk. If you'd like Socialist Worker delivered, email swpchesterfield@tesco.net. That's swpchesterfield@tesco.net. Or come along to the paper sale on Saturdays, or to our branch meetings on Thursday nights. Socialist Worker is your paper. Buy it, read it, sell it.
From the war, I was a prisoner, a hostage in your car, and you were fighting with fire. All morning the flames grew higher, but you knew exactly where to go. No, you don't know, no, you don't care what I'm feeling. Right is on your side, and you're stealing. Let me out, let me out of this now. Let me out, let me out of this now. You can take yourself where you want, but I'm moving out and you won't. Let me out, let me out of this now. If it isn't a flood, it's a quake. Every day it's the same mistake. You're so strung out, can't you please slow down? And you won't listen, although I know that you're hearing. You won't open up, what is it that you're fearing? Let me out, let me out of this now. I said let me out, let me out of this now. Well, you can take yourself where you want, I'm moving out cause you won't. So let me out, let me out of this now. Your relationships are frayed. You're a tablet short of a vodka in your way. Are you a prisoner too? Tell me, what's in it for you? So wipe the angry look from off your face. Don't get screwed up, don't bottle it all inside. It's not
me. It's you that's been taken for a ride. So let me out, let me out of this now. I said let me out, let me out of this now. You can take yourself where you want. I'm moving out and you won't. So let me out, let me out of this now. Please let me out, let me out of this now. I'm begging, let me out, let me out of this now. Oh, take yourself where you want, 'cause I'm moving out and you won't. Let me out, let me out of this now. Let me out, 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 let me out now.
Yeah, Sound of Tragic But Brave Mike, track entitled Token. And firefighters in England and Wales, including Chesterfield, have called strikes during two of the busiest periods of the Christmas holidays against government plans to make workers pay more into their pensions and work longer. Firefighters are set to walk out on Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve over Tory attacks on their pensions. The strike on Christmas Eve will begin at 7 p.m. and end at midnight, whereas the walkout on New Year's Eve is set to last from 6:30 p.m. through till 12:30 a.m. on New Year's Day. Workers are also set to strike on Friday the 3rd of January between 6:30 a.m. and 8:30 p.m. Firefighters are furious about a proposed rise in their pension contributions, and they face an additional threat to their pensions as the government ignores long-standing agreements. As a result, they will not receive the pension they were promised despite paying into their scheme for years. The new scheme expects firefighters to work until they are 60, up from 55. And the government also wants to make it easier to sack workers under capability assessments if they fail to maintain the required level of fitness. Outrageously, bosses in Manchester have already sacked one firefighter on capability grounds after he suffered an injury while he was working. That's effing disgusting, that is, if you ask me. Anyway, the Chesterfield... During the Chesterfield strikes, firefighters, certainly in previous strikes and presumably for these strikes as well, have been at the roundabout near B&Q. So come to the picket lines on Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve and show your solidarity with the firefighters. More details of the firefighters' dispute can be found once again in this week's Socialist Worker. And back to the music, appropriately enough, here's the sound of The Enemy Within. Strike.
It's the longest day we've been out. bibs for protecting a woman with two kids.
Yeah, Sound of the Enemy Within. Strike. Now, last weekend, the Socialist Workers' Party had its conference at which hundreds of delegates gathered. The Socialist Workers' Party faces a big task to turn outwards and for members to make a renewed effort to strengthen our party after what has been, no two ways about it, a difficult year for us. Across the globe, profound and sustained crises will lead to repeated explosions socially, economically, industrially and politically. So there will be opportunities for revolutionaries to intervene. But this intensifies the need for a party that is capable of working with other groups but maintaining a revolutionary edge. The SWP will push for action in the trade unions and against the bedroom tax and the cuts, and also fearlessly take on the lies of the racists. I mean, we need to make it clear that the problem is not the Bulgarians or the Romanians. The problem is the Etonians. To do this, we need stronger branches and a stronger party. And branch meetings need to address big political questions. Regularly winning new people is essential for a revolutionary party such as the SWP, and as we have recruited around 800 people this year, which is good, but we also need to retain members and to develop them for this educational's may well be the way forward. This has been a difficult and divisive year, as I say, for the SWP, and we have seen very sharp internal discussions. Delegates at the conference passed near unanimously a revised set of procedures for our disputes committee, which looks at matters of discipline and conduct. We hope this will give every member confidence in the processes. The Central Committee of the SWP made a statement that many people have suffered real distress as a result of taking part in or giving evidence to the Disputes Committee or due to slurs on the internet, and we apologise to all of them for that, especially the case of two women who brought very serious allegations against former comrades. At the same time, delegates showed through the votes at conference that they did not believe that the party and its leadership are sexist, or that they rode roughshod over the politics of women's liberation or covered up injustice in any way. So now the party needs to unite and move forward. To do this, we have formulated a battle plan. The SWP will throw itself into fighting to raise the level of resistance locally and nationally in the workplaces. The last thing we want is a repeat of the experience of Grangemouth. We will continue to build the People's Assembly and its actions, including the recall conference on the 15th of March and the Budget Day demonstrations on the 19th of March. We must combat fascism, racism, Islamophobia and anti-immigrant scapegoating. In particular, we will push strongly for the broadly supported demonstrations against racism on the 22nd of March. We will be part of the campaigns to kick out Nazi BNP MEPs Nick Griffin in North West England and Andrew Bronze in Yorkshire and Humberside. We want to be at the heart of the resurgence of struggle among students, but we also need to continue our emphasis on ideological meetings and putting forward a clear socialist analysis. The campaigns against the bedroom tax, benefit cuts and other welfare assaults remain important. We also need to think about our intervention in the elections in May. And there will also be other important political campaigns, such as the independence referendum in Scotland. Through all this, we will seriously work to strengthen our branches and increase the sales of Socialist Worker. And on that note, the SWP conference, its motions and the discussion of and votes are covered in far more detail in this week's Socialist Worker, so buy or read online your copy of Socialist Worker and read what actually happened, not second-hand backbiting on the internet. And back to the music now, we've got the Sound of the Gang of Four, track entitled It's Her Factory. Yeah.
snappy. That's all.
Yeah, sound there with It's Her Factory by the Gang of Four. And last Thursday, Chesterfield Socialist Workers' Party had a meeting on Nelson Mandela and his legacy by Comrade James. Take it away, James.
Welcome to another Socialist Worker Forum. Tonight, it's Mandela, the anti-apartheid hero, and the struggle continues.
Exactly a week, isn't it, since Mandela died? In fact, you know, we were meeting here last week and went home afterwards, turned the telly on, and there was the live announcement happening. The thing about the week since has been a wall-to-wall coverage, isn't there, really, in terms of Mandela. There's been lots of tributes on the TV, TV specials, news coverage, live coverage of the big ceremonies they've had in South Africa, both the big thing at the football stadium on Tuesday and the lying in wait stuff that's going on at the moment. And if you think about that coverage, I mean, a lot of it has been very, very moving, very, very powerful. Even a lot of the stuff out of the mainstream media, to tell you the truth, has been very, very good, very, very powerful, and really inspiring in a lot of sense. But at the same time, quite a lot of it, and quite a lot of things being said by quite a lot of the people commenting, and particularly the political leaders being asked to give their views on Mandela, have been also deeply hypocritical. What I first want to say is that as socialists, as committed anti-racist people see ourselves as fighting for a better world, fighting for justice, fighting for equality, fighting against racism, etc. We absolutely associate ourselves with the massive respect that is has been given out to Mandela over the last week, and you know, those tributes. We're part of that, and you know, we should pay our own tributes really and be part of that process. And part of what I want to do tonight is to do a bit of that. And you know, if you sort of think about Mandela as a key figure in the struggle for social justice, against racism, for a better world. I mean, he is one of the giants, isn't he, of the 20th century, towering up there in terms of his moral strength and his political steadfastness in the face of horrendous oppression. Anyone who's seen, I mean, it's like this stuff around Mandela. You sort of know it, and you've seen it, and you read about it years ago, but then you see it again, and it reminds you again. So you see this stuff about Robben Island, for example, again, and you see the level of oppression that went on inside Robben Island. They showed shots of the stone quarries where they put the prisoners to work, and I didn't realise this, but deliberately for the first 10 years, they weren't allowed to have sunglasses on. Yeah. There's a bright sunlight in this bright limestone quarry, and many of the prisoners suffered permanent damage to their eyes simply because they weren't allowed to wear sunglasses initially. Eventually they were. So I mean, this is a huge figure in terms of that. Obviously a massive impact on the struggle in South Africa, the towering figure of the liberation struggle in South Africa. Not the only figure, by the way, there are some very important other figures as well, but the towering figure of the liberation struggle in South Africa in terms of the role he played, both, you know, right the way through from the period of the early 1960s, where he first came to national prominence, where he made that very famous speech at the Rivonia trial, which, if you made him a sort of major leading political figure and got him a very significant attention, right the way through, of course, the period from his release from prison. I mean, everyone in the room, I'm sure, will have different sort of memories and recollections. I mean, my memory and recollection of Mandela's being released from prison, but also a huge influence in terms of campaigners. And picking anti-racist campaigns, you think about what Mandela and his stature and the presence of Mandela as a global figure has meant to the anti-racist struggle in the West, in this country and other countries, has been really, really important. And so we pay those tributes, absolutely. I think also as socialists, that's not all we do. We do pay those tributes, but we don't just come to remember, to memorialise and to praise. We do have to analyse, evaluate, have something to say really about Mandela's politics, about the politics of the ANC, the organisation that he was a leading part of, the way in which the struggle unfolded in South Africa, and also the current situation in South Africa. So, the first area I want to address is to go back to what I said at the beginning about the hypocrisy of much of the sort of, well, at least some of the public praise for Mandela. Because if you believe what a lot of the media outlets are saying, and certainly what you get from the mouths of people like Cameron, and I mean, what made me almost physically sick was George Osborne, who was a horrible, nasty, right-wing Tory shit, on the radio the other morning saying, "Oh, Mandela's struggle was the great political movement of my youth." Well, it may have been, George, but you were on the opposite side of that great political movement. It may have been the great political movement, but you and the people around you absolutely opposed Mandela and everything he stood for at that time. Osborne was a member of the Federation of Conservative Students, I was a student in the mid-80s. We came up against these people at NUS conferences or whatever with their Hang Nelson Mandela t-shirts. Yeah. This isn't just story time. They were there.
Yeah.
You know, we had to engage with these people. When we put up motions and argued in favour of sanctions against South Africa, they argued, no, we had to support the apartheid state. They were an important bulwark against communist terrorism inside South Africa, etc. And this is what these people argued at the time. Very, very important that we remember that when we see the likes of Osborne, when we see Cameron there at the funeral taking his selfies and all that sort of stuff. William Hague apparently today in the parliamentary event making his foot again. People with memories will remember Hague again as a young Tory acolyte back in the 1980s. He was one of the people who there was leading the charge in defence of Osborne. And you see, if we think about the ruling class in our country, in America, in much of Western capitalism, you see, the apartheid state was effectively set up, I mean, it's been a horrible racist place before South Africa, but the mechanics of the apartheid state were set up by the National Party in South Africa in the late 1940s, 47, 48, they really put into practice the fundamentally apartheid-based laws, the segregation, the racist laws, etc. And it lasted, what, till Mandela was released in 1990, the election took place in 1994. So the best part of 50 years, we had the existence of the apartheid regime. For the vast bulk of that time, the ruling classes, the elites, the business elite, the political elite of the West support the apartheid regime, absolutely. Yes, of course, there were some honourable exceptions. There were honourable liberal critics of the regime. There were people who, not socialists and people on the left, but there were some people, some religious people, some very good people inside the church, etc., from a moral point of view, did campaign and raise their voice against the apartheid system and the apartheid statement. But by and large, and by a vast majority, the ruling elites and their institutions in the Western capitalist countries support the apartheid regime down the line. It was the left, basically, and the solidarity campaigns that grew, first from very, very small origins around issues like sporting boycotts, etc., who were the people who headed up the opposition to the apartheid regime. Let's just think of one or two. The CIA, for example, great freedom fighters, defenders of liberty, they were the people who provided the intelligence for the South African regime to arrest and convict Mandela at the Rivonia trial. They had the spy networks, they knew, they bugged the ANC, they provided the information to arrest the ANC to get them convicted at those trials. I remember very, very clearly in the 70s and 80s, you watched film footage of the horrific repression in the townships, and you saw the armoured cars, British armoured cars, British weapons, British shotguns being used by the South African police to butcher, to murder people who dare to stand up for them. Multinational corporations, particularly as the South African economy began to take off in the 60s and 70s, the big names of global capitalism invested massively in South Africa. Why? Because what the South African state had done was created a very effective pool of cheap black labour through the apartheid. That's what the apartheid system did. It provided a cheap black labour force. So into that was sucked huge amounts of investment by multinational capital. The big names, Volkswagen, you name it, you know, were in there in South Africa manufacturing, making huge profits out of the sweated labour of black South African workers. Mandela and the other ANC leaders weren't actually officially unbanned by the US Congress from the travel ban that had been put on them until 2008. 2008 was that the Congress passed a motion undoing its previous banning order. Now, Mandela, they wavered Mandela's ban, so he's allowed to, but actually officially the ban on Mandela travelling still exists in the US until 2008. Really, really recently, they still had him banned. Thatcher, of course, famously said, you know, anyone who thinks that they'll ever see Nelson Mandela as president of South Africa lives in cloud cuckoo land. Well, good. We all live in cloud cuckoo land, because that's precisely what we saw. And people know the stuff, don't they? Cameron, of course, the young, spruced up David Cameron, just out of Oxford, what's his first job in PR to represent the South African regime, a PR job at the time when the South African regime was because of the activities of the Solidarity Movement, was beginning to lose its international representation. Cameron cuts his spurs in the PR industry by taking on a contract to represent South Africa, freebie paid trip to South Africa, etc. So we need to, all that stuff I think is really, really important that we are absolutely clear. One Tory politician arguing, and the cheek to argue, that actually Thatcher's support for the apartheid regime was all part of a cunning ploy. It's because she... actually, because Thatcher supported the apartheid regime publicly, that actually allowed it to be overthrown quicker than it otherwise would have been. And so supporting Thatcher, she was playing a very clever double game, really, by supporting them, by publicly supporting them, and that meant quietly she could whisper in F.W. de Klerk's ear, you know, should you bring about change? Complete and utter nonsense. Let's be absolutely clear. The pressures and forces that brought about the huge victory for the anti-apartheid movement, the destruction of the racist apartheid state, were primarily and firstly the mass popular uprisings in South Africa itself, particularly from the mid-1970s onwards, when the struggle really rose up to a new level and sustained itself really for 20 years, with ups and downs for 20 years. Hugely courageous struggle of the black South African masses. That's the key factor that brings about the change. Secondly to that, important but secondary, was a solidarity movement that developed around the rest of the world, which, you know, many comrades in this room can be very proud of being a part of, a small part of being that. And we collectively, as the left, if you want, are can again be very proud of our role in that. So it wasn't the main thing. Jerry Dammer's writing Free Nelson Mandela was really, really important. It didn't actually shake the South African regime. The cultural opposition, the music, all that stuff is really, really important. And the solidarity movement was fantastically important. And that, in fact, there's just a few things about the international solidarity movement, because that was something that, you know, people are involved. Sports boycotts, really, really important, that punctured the image of the white South African regime. The cultural boycotts, sort of talked about before, of musicians, artists, etc. But just remember when you look at your playlist, by the way, there's a list of shame, isn't it, as well? Those people who went and played Sun City, didn't they? Who went and played in the entertainment casinos set up by the South African racist regime to entertain their own. And there is a list of shame around that. But also fantastic and inspiring little stories about groups of workers, other groups of people who take up particular. I mean, it's been in the news again because they flew to South Africa. The Dunnes stores workers in Ireland, who Dunnes is equivalent to Marks and Spencer's in Ireland, a group of young women workers who read about South Africa, saw that they were selling South African goods in Dunnes stores, said, we can't do this. And they went on strike, and stayed on strike for nearly 2 years in Dunnes stores, challenging the power of a huge retail organisation in Ireland. Fantastic, courageous strike. And other little stories, actually, at the Trades Council meeting on Monday night. John Knight, who's a former engineering worker, who's one of the members of the Trades Council, used to work at the Sheepbridge Works, was one of the shop stewards and conveners there, told a I hadn't heard him tell the story before, really interesting story about how in the mid-1970s, Sheepbridge was making components for the South African regime. They boycotted them. They had a mass meeting of the workforce. They got all the people together, the staff and the officers, as well as the shop floor. They explained the issues around apartheid. No one had heard of Nelson Mandela. People didn't know about apartheid. Large numbers of workers listened to the arguments and said, we shouldn't be doing this, we'll boycott production. And the company went livid about it. And those are just some of the stories in terms of solidarity. And those are really important stories. So that's an important part of it. But of course, the struggle in South Africa is really important as well. And I want to say a couple of things about that. And that really leads us on to, if you want, the way the struggle develops and the politics of the African National Congress. That leads us on to the other sort of problematic area, really, about when we talk about Mandela. Because all the positive things, which are absolutely deserved in terms of the struggle, we also have to address the fact that if we look at South Africa today, the level of inequality in South Africa today remains absolutely huge, and in many respects has actually widened with the continuation of neoliberal free market policies right the way through since the early 1990s. The poorer, the richer in South Africa, and the desperation of large numbers of the population is still really, really intense. So those are issues. So I want to just spend a bit of time talking about the ANC and the politics of the ANC, Mandela's organisation. See, the ANC had been around for a long time. In the 50s, it was quite a small, quite moderate lobbying group. A group of young, new activists inside the ANC, Mandela's one of them, Walter Sisulu, Mbeki, other key names you may have heard of in terms of the leadership of the ANC, were then young radicals, really. And they shook up the ANC and argued the ANC should take on a far more activist, confrontational, but non-violent strategy. And that's what the way they pushed that. And they said, we must organise from below, organise protests, boycotts, strikes, etc., with some important success. What was the response of the South African state to that? Was to use absolute brutality, most famously the Sharpeville massacre of 1960, where school students protesting were shot down in huge numbers. The response of Mandela and the ANC leadership, I think quite rightly, was to say, we cannot simply continue with an armed struggle. Faced with that level of resistance, we need to have a different form of struggle. And they formed Umkhonto and Sizwe MK, the armed wing of the ANC. And it was because of that, of course, Mandela was arrested, tried, exiled and imprisoned. And actually, at the trial where Mandela and the other leaders were imprisoned, the ANC was broken up effectively. It was broken up as an organisation. It was pushed deep underground in South Africa, imprisoned, and essentially became an exile-based organisation. Most of the ANC leaders went to the so-called frontline states, the surrounding states around South Africa, and on the ground in South Africa, the ANC had really suffered a knockback. And really for 10 years or so, 10, 12 years, the level of struggle and resistance in South Africa really declined significantly. What begins to change? It begins to change in the mid-1970s, where things really begin to pick up in the mid-1970s. We see in the mid-1970s an upsurge in struggle from two sources, really. Firstly, from, if you want, the poor, and particularly from young people, and particularly among school students, and in Soweto in particular, we see in the mid-1970s inspiring uprisings of the school students, which then blossomed into the township-based constant uprisings, where week after week, month after month, there'll be a constant level of mass struggle from below in the huge townships, these shantytown areas surrounding the big industrial area, particularly in the Transvaal around Johannesburg, the big industrial areas also around Cape Town, etc. A huge level of resistance on the street, met with brutality by the apartheid state. That's one element of it. And the other element of it was actually because of the investment I talked about earlier by big capital, South Africa was now a developing industrial state. There was a new, large and quite powerful black working class in the mid-1970s. The black working class began to strike, began to organise, build their own trade unions. Organisations like COSATU, etc., etc., established as very, very important centres of struggle and a very, very high level of struggle. Now, the ANC, you see, were not central to that process. They weren't central to that process. The movement on the streets, if you want, was mainly led by newer groups of the ANC leadership were basically abroad in exile or in prison, like Mandela. Newer groups, men like Steve Biko, for example, people have heard of MC Biko, a movement known as the Black Consciousness Movement, which was highly political, but came from a slightly different political tradition to the ANC. And many workers were, I suppose, what we call syndicalists. They saw about trade union struggle and economic gains being the key thing. That was the struggle that began to emerge. I'll say a couple of things about the political strategy of the ANC. You see, right from the beginning, in the period when Mandela was first coming to the ANC politically was very much under the influence of the South African Communist Party. And the links between the South African Communist Party and the ANC are very well established. And again, the South African Communist Party is a fantastic, heroic organisation. And the critical point I'm about to make now, I've got absolutely nothing to do with criticism of the huge heroism of South African communists who faced the brutal, the real brutal lash of oppression right the way through the generations. But we have to say, the SACP, the South African Communist Party, had a strategy which they held with communist parties around the world, particularly in what we call the Third World, on what they called a stages theory of revolution. And the argument essentially was that you couldn't have a socialist revolution straight off, basically, in the developing world, the colonially oppressed world. You had to go through two stages. Firstly, you had to go through a stage of national liberation, effectively, where you won your independence. You, in the case of South Africa, you got rid of the racist, oppressive state. And then, having established a capitalist but non-racial South Africa, or in the case of the former colonies, having established, if you want, a decolonized state, but still effectively a capitalist state, with the bourgeoisie still dominant and capital still dominant, then at some stage in the future, we can talk about a second revolution where we'll talk about building socialism. Now, our tradition, the revolutionary socialist tradition, the tradition that really comes straight from Lenin and from Trotsky and the Third International at the beginning of the 20th century, had always argued for a different tradition, the theory of permanent revolution, that really, as part of the mass struggle of the working people for liberation in terms of democracy, human rights, anti-racism, that struggle has to transfer over, the power of that struggle has to transfer over into a struggle against capital. Because apartheid wasn't some sort of aberration of the capitalist system. The apartheid system was all about how to make capitalism in South Africa profitable, how to make it function as a system. It needed the apartheid system to make it function in its stage of development. Therefore, struggle against apartheid has to be a struggle against capitalism. That wasn't the politics of the ANC. And there's a quote from Mandela when talking about, this is when he's still in prison actually, talking about the future of South Africa and what the ANC envisages. He talks about a South Africa which will open up fresh fields for the development of a prosperous non-European bourgeois class, i.e. what we're trying to, it essentially is a black middle class, a black capitalist class, to become the new capitalist in South Africa. Get rid of racial division, absolutely right, but not because we're fighting for a socialist future necessarily, but we're fighting for, if you want, a capitalist non-racial South Africa. And that is really, really important for us. Now, in the late 70s and 80s, I said the ANC weren't in the leadership of these struggles, but were able to re-establish themselves as the mass organisation of it. And a lot of that is credit to Mandela and the legacy of Mandela. The fact that the ANC were able, and because they had organisation and money to some extent, and a political strategy as well, the ANC were able to gradually come to hegemonise the movement in South Africa as well. And Mandela's legacy is really important in that. He plays a huge role in that. You know, the prisoner and Robben Island, the huge moral authority of that. And also, and this is still around today, by the way. If you listen to the songs and things people sing on the streets, the legacy of the armed struggle, of MK, of Nkonto Sizwe, the spirit of the nation, that's what it means in Xhosa. And that had a huge popular appeal. To, you know, these were the heroes who dared to take up the gun to fight for liberty. So it gave the ANC huge moral and political credibility amongst the masses, which enabled them to really become part of the leadership of the movement. What was the response of South African states and the movement as it develops in the 70s and 80s? Well, essentially they moved back to mass repression. Huge difference. We talked about Soweto. We've got Sharpeville in the 1960s, Soweto in the mid-1970s. The same old repression. Again, those of us of a certain age will remember the pictures night after night. I remember those big wagons and they used to stand at the side and they take just like in the Wild West and they pot shots at people shooting to kill. Huge levels of repression against the protest movement. They also tried the divide and rule tactic, actually with bloody efficiency. They used tribalism, divide and rule. People remember they set up this black party called Inkatha, the Inkatha Freedom Party, used forms of tribal divisions to try and divide and weaken the movement. It meant a huge bloodshed, actually. Hundreds of people killed. And actually, they used many other tactics as well. But by the late 1980s, they began to realise things had to change. The South African ruling class realised things had to change. They began to talk about unbanning the ANC, the release of Mandela, that eventually led to the 1994 election. Very, very important process. And for all our criticism of Mandela, he played a fantastic principal and also a pretty skillful role through that process. And he did that. What about South Africa today? Now look, it'd be absolutely crass to say nothing's changed, it's just as bad as it was. No, absolutely not the case. The political reforms in South Africa are fantastically significant. No question about it. The political and legal gains made by the massive black South Africans are absolutely crucial and real in all sorts of human terms, fantastically significant gains. You can see this again. People remember the elections in 1994, the first election took place. People queued for hours and hours and hours to vote because it's so important that at last they had their right to express their views. They're actually a socialist. I mean, we don't agree with this idea that voting is irrelevant and whatever. Actually, the right to vote is a key democratic demand that people have fought for with their blood, etc., etc. You know, and where we've had electoral systems that have denied people the right to vote, whether it's in Northern Ireland or South Africa, fighting for basic democratic rights is a really important thing that so those are real important, and you can see that again in the responses on the streets in last week in South Africa. People's association with what it's meant to them personally for the struggle ahead. So that is absolutely the case. However, in economic terms and in social terms, the power of capital remains absolutely intact in South Africa. And Mandela talked about the creation of a new black with a vengeance. It's happened, isn't it? Yeah. There is a new black ruling elite, super rich. And many of them, frankly, the people who were key leaders in the struggle. Cyril Ramaphosa, the leader of the National Union of Mine Workers, now sits on the board of Lonmin, the major South African mining corporation who just last year massacred dozens of miners who dared to strike Americana for a decent wage. Just the same things that he was leading workers for 20, 30 years ago, demanding the right. Jacob Zuma, the president, huge stories about corruption, £20 million on home improvements. I mean, you know, you couldn't make this stuff up, could you? Massive levels of corruption in terms of their power is intact. Huge discrepancy between the rich and the poor. And a huge level of struggle, by the way. I mean, I haven't got time to go into it, but there's a very good article in this month's issue written before Mandela died about the state of popular uprising in South Africa at the moment. Really, really significant stuff. See, I want to end with another quote from Mandela. It's in this week's Socialist Work for people to read it, because Mandela is a contradictory figure. That first quote from him. There's another quote from Mandela which I think goes to the heart, I think, of what does the best out of his politics. He says this. This is him making a speech in 1993. He's out of prison already, okay, just before he becomes president. He says this: how many times has the liberation movement worked together with the working class and then at the moment of victory betrayed the workers? There are many examples of that in the world. Speaking of 1993. It's only if the workers strengthen their organisation before and after liberation that you can win. If you relax your vigilance, you'll find that your sacrifices have been in vain. And then he says, you just support the African National Congress only so far as it delivers the goods. Only support them so far as it delivers the goods. If the ANC government does not deliver the goods, you must do what you've done to the apartheid regime, to the ANC, and that's Mandela himself.
So there you have it. And back to the music now. Here's the Sound of Rage Against the Machine from the first album, Township Rebellion.
Life is lost.
This is the Radio Resistance Red Guide, a guide to meetings of interest to left-wingers in the Chesterfield area. On Thursday, January the 9th, Chesterfield branch of the Socialist Workers' Party has its report from SWP conference. This will be held at 7:30 p.m. in a new venue, the Market Halls in Market Square, Room 1. Then on Thursday, January the 16th, there's going to be the branch meeting of the Chesterfield Socialist Workers' Party on how the Tories are wrecking education. Michael Gove is leading the Tories into a full-scale assault on education, determined to turn our schools, colleges and universities into privately run businesses. What is the Tory vision for our education system, and what is the socialist alternative? This will be held at 7:30 p.m. also in the Market Halls, Market Square, Room 1. Remember, what the working class needs a party which will not sell out to a right-wing agenda to gain middle-class votes. What the working class needs a party which will not kowtow to the bosses and the ruling class. What the working class needs is a party which is run by and for the working class. The Socialist Workers' Party is that party.
When precise disorder and sugar, the hit and the beat, we keep it hotter than fire, straight spitting the heat. So you know for a fact that this clique is elite, and we're still f***ing you to the pigs in the street. Cause this city that we're living in is f***ing weak, full of mans for no reason, just bringing the beef. And the government is crooked and ragged, good job I'm loving this rapping. So we just say and smash it, but sometimes I don't know how my brain copes. I sit and chain smoke, stay stoned as I let the rage grow. Hit the stage show and make sure I'm dropping a rap right, and keep this shit hotter than the rocks in a crack pipe. My mind stays high like the stars in the sky, and my soul stays trapped in the dark of the night. And my mind stays sharper than knives, my flows hit hard like nails hammered straight through the palm of the crown.
There's nothing great about it, that's why we stay spitting. And that's the life that we're living. You better nod your head to the kicks and the snare. There ain't nothing great about Britain, that's why we stay spitting
the rottenish.
And that's the life that we're living. You better nod your head to the kicks and the snare, and say off Great Britain with your fists in the air.
The same kids I used to idolise, I hate now. They kept the same values from the playground, fighting over until the day it kills them. They call each other big men, so why'd you act like children? See me, I stick to what I know best, making music. I find it therapeutic, always looking out for see hip hop right now, like the heavyweight division. Lack of talent, title there for the lifting. It's not a lack of skill, just a lack of it in depth. People bite each other's arms, are scared to make something fresh. So you knock some together, yeah. You thought it sounded clever, yeah. Reality, it's rubbish, full of schoolboy errors. Music off, I watch the news to get me downhearted. Two women die a week at the hands of their partners. The bank used to love me, now I'm skint, they give me charges. They can suck the richest on the poorer man regardless. Race is turning on their own, it leaves them torn when they ain't accepted here or where mama was born. So they travel on a plane to what's supposed to be the motherland. Because they've lived in Britain, then they're no longer a brother man. So jump into their shoes, the two, here's the onus. They get back home to get abused again and feel homeless. So jump into their shoes, the two, cause here's the onus. They get back home to get abused again and feel homeless.
There ain't nothing great about Britain, that's why we stay spitting. And that's the life that we're living. You better nod your head to the kicks and the snare. There ain't nothing great about Britain, that's why we stay spitting.
The rock. finish. And that's the life that we live in. You better nod your head to the kicks and the snare and say, oof, Great Britain, with your fists in the air.
Years run strong, number ones come along. Heads follow on, jogging on, going off on one. Dedicated, weed medicated, slated rappers through mass facts I stated. Underestimated, underrated, now greatest. Dominating mics on a full-time basis. Status okay, but do I still wanna make it? I just wanna live on good monthly wages. My life's like a it's controlled by a matrix. I hate this Great Britain that tax created. I wish I could go back to olden ages. All you see these days is life being wasted. Eights all over, from Scotland to Dover. Thousands are thinking we are stoner personas, so hold your fists up, skin your spliffs up. If you're Britain, I've written you this. Off Britain.
Yes, Sound of Constant Creation, track entitled FCUK Britain. Now, in last week's Socialist Worker, in their article on the protests in the Ukraine, they mentioned that that Lenin's statue was torn down during the protests. My first thought was sort of, good that they're is an uprising there, but why is everyone being so horrible to Lenin? Well, in most cases, I'd say it's probably true that people are not angry with Lenin as such, or what he actually stood for, but with the perverted caricature of Lenin as promoted by Stalin and by his successors in the USSR, as was. Indeed, one bitter irony is that Lenin, the target of the Ukraine protesters' anger, was... He actually supported the independence of nations such as Ukraine, which had been oppressed and subjugated by the Tsarist Russian Empire. Indeed, Lenin, at the helm of the 1917 Russian Revolution, also oversaw a number of positive progressive movements, such as the... He oversaw women's liberation, which gave access to divorce on demand, communal childcare and laundry and kitchens, etc., to free women from the drudgery of work in the home. The legalisation of homosexuality, there was total religious freedom, and an end to the pogroms against Jews, and last but certainly not least, the transfer of power to the working class. Now, when Stalin rolled back all of these gains, he did so by invoking the image of Lenin. But Lenin, like Trotsky, and like Tony Cliff, the founder of the SWP, Lenin was a true Marxist. And Marxism is not a pick-and-mix philosophy. You can't choose which bits are convenient to yourself. That's not to say that you can't debate the teachings of Marx and Lenin. Indeed, we must debate Marx and Lenin simply so that we can gain a better understanding of what he actually stood for and his relevance in the present day. But to be claimed to be a Marxist without supporting Marx's fundamental core principles of internationalism, the centrality of workers' power, and the total opposition to oppression, is a little bit like buying a computer without a microprocessor, or without memory, or without a power supply. It ain't gonna work. Anyway, back to the music. Here's the Sound of the V Faction, track entitled Good Politics.
They try to use me, the bourgeoisie abuse me, but they won't confuse me, 'cause I've been infused by some good politics. Ain't you glad they wrote it? Ain't you glad you can read it? Now we can't be defeated, 'cause we've been treated to some good politics. Ain't no use complaining, get out there campaigning. We've got something to say,
try and tame me. The Tories try and blame my class. I know what they say can last. We invest some good politics. Ain't too glad about the 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 good politics. Ain't too happy 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 about the good politics.
Up Radio Resistance.
Yeah, the sound there of the faction track entitled Good Politics. Now we're coming towards the end of this week's broadcast of Radio Resistance Chesterfield. So over to you. If you'd like to contact us, you can email us at radioresistancechesterfield@yahoo.co.uk. That's radioresistancechesterfield@yahoo.co.uk. You can phone us on 0793 479 3041. That's 0793 479 3041. You can search for Radio Resistance Chesterfield on Facebook, like our page, and then send us a message on Facebook or post something on our wall. If you're listening to Radio Resistance right now on someone else's computer or even on your radio because someone's transmitting it through their pocket pirate or what have you, if you'd like to find Radio Resistance for yourself, it's at sail.to/radioresistance. That's sail.to/radioresistance. Or else you can find us at www.reddisability.org/radio-resistance. That's www.reddisability.org/radio-resistance. And before I go, there's one question you're probably asking. Considering there isn't a paper next week, socialist workers having time off for the holiday, is there going to be a Radio Resistance next week? The answer is yes. Although we're not going to have news from Socialist Worker, there is going to be a Radio Resistance. We are going to play the best in left-wing music. As per usual, there's still going to be the Red Guide. There's quite a bit in this week's Socialist Worker, which I haven't had time to cover this broadcast, which I'll discuss in the next broadcast, and no doubt there'll be other issues that'll come up between now and then. So until next week, I'm going to love you and leave you with a track by a group which features at least one member who's been heavily involved in the movement against the war in Iraq and recorded a anti-Iraq war song, and the band themselves were involved back in the 80s during the miners' strike in supporting gigs who rose funds to continue the miners' strike. Yes, it's Wham. I'm going to love you and leave you with Last Christmas. So if I don't see you before, have as Merry Christmas as it's possible to have under the Condemns. Let's hope there's a revolutionary new year.